trouble. Is that the official way to get a meeting started?
However you want it to go.
All right. So we have a very long day with a whole lot on the agenda. But let's take just a second to go around and do our quick little intro and talk about anything that might be going on in our lives related to the work that we do. Obviously, may or may not involve the weather. I'm Lydia Sanders. I'm the homeless liaison for Battleground Schools. We are working on some really exciting stuff. We just got a grant to partner with Connect Battleground to provide mentors to our unaccompanied youth. And my ulterior motive is to help Connect Battleground set up the processes and the procedures so that they can roll forward with it with volunteers after the grant money is down the road. So I'm really excited about that.
Yeah, that's great.
So what else is going on in everybody else's world?
Well, I'm Rebecca, and I live out in Camas. We have a lot of snow hikes out there up in the hills. I actually start a new job tomorrow at Community Services Northwest, and I looked at my job description, and they're actually having me work with mental health clients and housing. So I was, like, really excited because this is something that, you know, I just joined this board. And so I'm really excited that I will be able to use my knowledge and help clients with their needs. So.
Excellent. They'll complement each other.
Yes.
Great.
So I'm really excited.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Bridget?
Makes me feel like I'm very disconnected.
<That's okay.
laughs> I'm only just recovering from being away from it, so I haven't done anything constructive for it.
But you got home safely.
Yeah, did. Before the snow. That was good.
Good.
Mavis Nichols, Battleground, School Board. I'm very excited that our superintendent, whom we dearly love, announced his retirement last week. Actually, and last night we decided to offer the position of superintendent to his assistant, Mark Ross. The reason for doing that is because Mark will continue right down the whole pathway of social-emotional health for all of our students. And Curtis even asked me if I wanted to be a guinea pig mentor, and I said, if I can work in my time schedule, why not? So I'm really excited that we'll be continuing all the things that we've been putting in place for the last 3 years. But I hate to see Mark out of it.
Yeah, me too.
My name is Sheree too. Just trying to remain active and in what I'm doing and working.
Well, that's a lot in and of itself, isn't it?
I'm Janet. I'm the OA for Clark County.
Rebecca Royce, Clark County Community Services staff to the board. I did want to let you guys know, just if you need restrooms, there's two restrooms in the back. And then please don't hesitate to get up and get coffee and tea and snacks throughout the meeting.
And Michael Torres, Department of Community Services staff in Clark County, Community Housing and Development, working with them.
Anything you guys want to mention about things you might be working on lately?
I've been working heavily on the community needs assessment, and then we have CDBG and home funds applications that were submitted and we're in the review process, so we're pretty busy.
Excellent.
So, yeah, we're going to talk, actually, I think today, of touch on a lot of things we're working on. Tomorrow, myself and Andy Silver with Vanessa have a workshop with the council to give them an overview of the homeless crisis response system. So I think you guys are going to get some of that this afternoon. And also help the council be ready to support either removing or extending the sunset on the document reporting fees that fund the homeless crisis response system. So that and the community needs assessment analysis are two of my big to-do lists right now. Which, Rebecca, which you will see, like you're going to see a glimpse today on the initial survey results. But I am incredibly impressed and happy with the hard work Rebecca has done on this. And I think there's a lot to be excited about that you will see.
Excellent. Thank you. Well, also, Michael, it was just great to hear from you how seriously everyone is taking that community needs assessment and how important that really is for guiding the work that we're going to be doing. So I'm really grateful for all the work that y'all are doing on that. Judith, we were just going around and...
I know, I'm sorry. I was lost in the maze here.
Don't even worry about it. But we were just going around and introducing ourselves yet again and talking about anything that might be going on in our work life or volunteer life related to the work that we do.
Okay, I'm Judith Walseth, and I did make contact with two people, one in Camas and one in Washougal, so I'm setting up some meetings to meet hopefully with their city councils to talk about CAB and listen to them about what their needs are.
Excellent.
I'm supposed to represent East County.
That's great advocacy.
So anyway, Paul Greenlee in Washougal is very helpful in getting one thing started, and Melissa Smith in Camas is the other person that steered me in the right direction there. So
awesome.
That won't happen until February or possibly March, but that's a goal.
But great advocacy work. Sweet. All right. Well, thank you, everybody. We will move on to open up the floor to any nominations for executive officers. And so, Rebecca, do we want to just open that up and finish it at a later date, or do we want to, what do we want to do?
So this will be the last call for nominations.
Oh, okay.
And then we can go ahead, if there's no nominations at this time, we'll go ahead and vote on the executive team. I do have an email from Julie, who is voting for the current or the slated executive team, if there's no other nominations.
And I think the executive team, all three of us are happy to move forward, but if anybody else would like to nominate anyone, now's the time, and we'll just open it up for a second. Anyone? Okay, so should we make a motion?
I move that we elect Lydia Sanders chair, Paula Martin vice chair, Mavis Nichols secretary.
Any seconds?
I'll second it.
Okay. And is there any further discussion?
You're doing well.
Oh, yeah, you're good.
So, all in favor?
Aye.
All right. Any opposed? This motion passes.
Yay.
Like a boss.
Nice. I just have to say, y'all know how much me and parliamentary procedure, mix well. Rebecca made me a cheat sheet, and I am so grateful for her. So thank you, Rebecca, again. So motion passes, and we will roll forward with the current executive team and go on from there. So now we will move on to regular board business, and I'll turn it over to Rebecca.
Great. So as you guys know, we have all of the administrative burdens for having federal funds, and so that requires us to do things on a regular basis. Some of these items under board business don't have to be done every year. Some of them are every 2 years. But to make sure that we know we get them done and stay under in compliance, we decided it'd just be easier to do it every year. And that way we know we have our ducks in a row. So the first thing is that to make sure that you guys have the most updated version of the bylaws. It's a large packet, so we didn't print it here, but it was sent out to you in your email reminder. And I am more than happy to print you a copy if you do need an updated version. It's also available on the website under the Community Action Advisory Board. So there's several ways that you can find that. The next item of business is that we have a regular discussion about programs and financial information for the programs that we fund. So in your packet, you'll see the very large report that we've all gotten very used to seeing. There are two things that I want to point out that I missed before I printed them, so I want to greatly apologize. When I was reviewing this, nothing stuck out as being super odd. Everybody seems to be spending out on a good pace. This is going through September, so it's a third quarter report, so it's not end of year, so they won't be spent out completely on this report here. And most of our contracts are two-year report contracts, so even if they didn't spend out all of their funding, they will just roll it into next year and spend it out before the end of next year. So the first thing I noticed was I missed putting in the number of households served for the Second Step Housing Program on page 2, second section down. They have served 13 households through September. So I apologize for missing that number on your report. And then I also missed on the third page under the Consolidated Homeless Grant for SHARE Aspire program, the last one of that section. They have served 15 households. When I was talking to the agency to get to make sure I had the numbers correct, I found out that they were actually reporting duplicated numbers on their previous quarterly reports. So what they would do is they would look and see who they had served between January and March, and then April through June, not January through June, to give us an updated and only adding in the additional people that were served. So these numbers, except for the 15 households served, that is an unduplicated number. The other two are duplicated. Their next quarterly report that's due at the end of this month, they'll correct that. So our final report will have the correct number of unduplicated households served for these outcomes.
Is that for all the SHARE?
I don't believe so. I believe it's just the Aspire programs. There's one person that does the reporting for that. Most of the programs have a lead person that does the reporting, so it'd be different people for the different programs that they have. But now that they're aware, they'll make sure it's all corrected, and the fourth quarter report will be completely unduplicated.
I'm sorry, which is the Aspire program?
So on page 3,
oh.
And then the last one of that first section, SHARE Aspire Program Supported Housing, and it has a blank space.
Okay.
So that should be the 15 households. And I think I apologize for missing that in the first place, but it was kind of a good thing because then I found out that we needed to have them correct the way they were reporting. You'll see that just above the SHARE Aspire that the SHARE HEN program hasn't spent out much, but that's because they're on a different time frame for their contract. It didn't start until July, so they're actually on time for their reporting cycle. Are there any questions about the quarterly report? Anything you wanted to add, Michael?
Nope. Thank you, Cassie.
The next item of business is we need to get an updated conflict of interest policy that should be in your packets. And it hasn't changed. The same conflict of interest that's in the bylaws, and we just put it on a separate form and ask that you sign it. So if sometime today you'll sign that for me and turn it into Janet, we'll make sure that we have that updated and on file. Are there any questions about the conflict of interest policy? Fantastic. We're going to move through these so quick. So the next item is that every 2 years we are supposed to make sure that we...
somebody has a black convertible.
Yeah.
Their lights are on.
Oh.
Bridget.
Thank you.
Oh.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Just don't want you to have a dead battery.
No, you should go out on a bunch of friends.
Yeah, I do too.
Thank you, everybody.
So every 2 years we have, it's required that we make sure that the board knows what their general member role is here. So you'll see it, there's a two-page document in your packet, and it talks about the position, it talks about the mission, and I'll put a side note to that here in just a moment. And then the board member qualifications, and as you know, we have to have one member from each of the districts that the CAB, of the CAB districts that we have designated. Each one, three representatives from each district, one is elected, one is a community member, and one is a representative of the low-income community. We have a full board right now, so it's fantastic. We're super excited that we have a full board. And I just wanted to go briefly over a few of the roles of the CAB members. You know, just making sure that you're making funding recommendations that serve the basic and essential welfare, housing, health, and safety needs of our low-income communities, that we establish a legacy that preserves human dignity and responds to those basic human needs, and that the board provides input and helps disseminate community reports regarding the work of community action, and that would include the community needs assessment that we're currently working on, our community action annual report that we'll be doing here in a couple of months. And then we periodically have other reports that come out. So having you guys help us talk about it in the community really spreads the word of community action and what we're doing. The board terms are that every member there's three-year terms, unless you are filling a vacant role. Then your first term is filling that last portion of that, and then you can be reappointed to the board two more times for three-year terms. Lydia has just started her last three-year term with us, so she'll be here for three more years, then she'll have to exit the board, and we'll have to find somebody to fill the huge role that she's been taking with this board. So start now. It's 3 years. We have 3 years to fill it. Some of the board member expectations, you know, just make sure that you regularly attend the meetings. Be alert to the community needs. Advocate for and promote the mission, goals, and objectives of DCS. Treat other members with respect. And serve as a mentor for new members. Rebecca is our newest member, so she's had a lot of experience on other boards, so she's kind of just able to go and roll. But, you know, we all know that all the funding that we work with is overwhelming, and there's a lot to learn for this board. So we'll help Rebecca get on board and learn all the new stuff that's going on. And then some of the benefits include, you know, leadership opportunities, being the chair of the board on the executive team, you know, supporting Clark County staff to ensure that the needs of the CAB members are met. It's one of the things that we ask that, you know, I'm only one person, Michael's one person, together we're a team, but I, you know, really rely on the board to help make sure that we are going in the right direction for the funding and the services that we provide in the community. The meeting and time commitments, this is something that the executive team has been talking a little bit about. We currently meet every other month, the odd number months, for an hour and a half. We know that these meetings are super packed with information, and so the executive team wanted to put out to the board, and we'll have more discussion at the March meeting about possibly going back to meeting every month. And so just kind of keep that in the back of your minds, and we'll really discuss that at the March meeting. Other responsibilities include going to other community meetings and events if you're available. It's not a requirement, but we do like it when you can go out to other meetings and bring that information back to the board. And then just, on average, the board members will spend 3 hours per month attending meetings, providing advocacy, and reading materials from the CAB executive team. So I wanted to go back to the mission statement. We're going to have a presentation later this morning by Vanessa and Ryan. We've been going through a theory of change process for the last couple of years, and they're going to give an update to that. If you'll recall last January meeting, Vanessa spoke about our mission statement and how we were in the midst of updating it and changing it. We have gotten a new mission statement, and it's been approved by all of the staff. And so one of the requirements of the advisory board is to approve the mission statement, and we'll actually do that later in the day. But I did update the board member description with that new mission statement. So the new mission is that the Clark County Department of Community Services supports all people in our community to increase their well-being and economic security through partnerships. So that is our new mission statement. Are there any questions about the board responsibilities? Fantastic. So it's just another document to have you sign and date and turn
in. I did have one question. Of the three districts, now those districts, it's not defined here, but those are the districts served by CAB. They don't have anything to do with council.
They were originally based on the commissioner districts,
right?
But they no longer are. So yes, they are kind of their own standalone districts, and we just call them the CAB districts.
Okay, that's not real clear on here. So it says one position per district, and I don't know whether somewhere that's defined or not.
I know in the board. The membership packet, it kind of goes in more detail and actually has a map of it. And then it's on the website also that breaks it down.
Would it be wise? Would it be something to consider as to having one per counselor?
So we did. We've had discussions about this, and so what it would do is would expand our board by three. The concern that we have is being able to fill the positions, because now we're shrinking the district sizes. I have no doubt the community member role would be filled. No, that one does not concern me. Low-income reps are harder to find, and tend to be the position that's vacant, and vacant for a considerable amount of time, which takes us out of compliance with the Act, with the CSBG Act. And then also with the elected officials, it can be difficult to getting an elected official to fill the role. So we had a lot of good discussions about it. So I'm concerned at this point. I wouldn't want to take us out of compliance.
So the only thing I would add is in the discussions, and I've also had a couple of discussions with Vanessa about this, and we basically agree, like between me, Vanessa, and Rebecca, that it does make more sense to have the CAB districts or the CAB regions reflect the county council regions. And that is the direction that we want to move. And I hope that at some point we do. I think at some point we might be required to move in that direction by the Board of County Councilors. But exactly as Rebecca mentioned, we don't want to be instantly out of compliance with our organizational requirements, and we don't want to put ourselves in a situation where we've just made it harder to meet those requirements by about a third, in terms of the CAB board. So I think that is that's an excellent question to ask, and to have in the back of your mind is, the fact that the county charter passed and the county organization is different matters, and it makes sense that this board reflects that, but just understand that there the differences in recruitment and in compliance with the federal and state requirements in CSBG, which have nothing to do with the charter, do become harder if we try to mirror those.
So is it possible to vary the numbers? Like, it would make sense to me that the community representatives reflect the councilors' districts. But it's not necessarily the case that we need five public officials.
So the elected official is required, one for each district.
Right now, but I'm just saying, I see what it is now, but could you reframe it that it would be, say, three electric officials?
No, because the tripartite board is a federally legislated requirement.
Okay,
part of this
that was my question.
I mean, absolutely, and we've, that's part of the kind of conversations that we've had.
Sure.
Can we do these? Because, we want to be as aligned as possible,
sure,
with the county organization. But the federally legislated requirement is that it be a tripartite board.
And because we're a public agency, there's more stringency on the board design,
sure,
than a nonprofit,
right,
community action agency, where they have more flexibility to do that.
Sure.
We, as a public agency, we actually have to have districts or regions or something like that to ensure that we have representation throughout our community. We can have as many low-income reps as we want on the board. We could open it up and have six more if we wanted, because it's just at least one in each district. I don't see that happening because we don't tend to have very many applicants for that position when they're open. Community reps, we have tons. Like I said, we could fill entire community reps positions. But
so when you say you could have as many low income as you wanted, it's not that we're looking at three votes from public officials and three from community reps and three from low income reps. It could be nine low income reps.
Yes. So we still have to have representation. So we would still have to have at least three because we have three.
Yeah, it's not equal voting basis. That's what I was saying.
The whole idea of the advisory board is really to make sure that we have low income representation on the board.
How does it look now as far as the maps go with the redistricting of our county councilors? We are pretty spread out as a board. Do we have at least some representation in each of those new districts?
I would have to take a look at all of your addresses. Uh-huh. I don't believe so.
Okay.
The new district is near us.
Yeah.
So it is us.
But the thing is, because both of you are Battleground, I think Battleground is part, some of Battleground is part of that old cab district.
Yeah. You know.
And I live really on the edge of the district.
I had to look very closely at her address.
Right, because I live just half a mile from 205 and in by Evergreen High School. Yeah. So, I don't know, honestly, the East County area. That's my goal, is to get to know that a little better. You know?
But, you know, so, and sorry to just jump in and interrupt here. You know, looking at the board representation, we do have some good geographic distribution, you know, throughout the county. You know, bottom line is that if we change, or whenever we change the cab districts to reflect the county districts, we are going to have add board members.
Right.
You know, like you know, so I think the basic question of, do we have good representation, geographic representation of the county on this board right now? Yes, we do. You know, does the representation of on the board currently reflect the current county districts? No, it does not. You know, certainly, you know, like so there's some overlap like you're discussing, but just because of the change, you're not going to have that exact reflection.
No. Right.
So, you know, so as Rebecca said, you know, it will require adding board members, and it will definitely, having elected board members will be, you know, the two hard asks I see in that are elected board members and low income representation. Not because there's lack of interest in low income representation, but just the nature of having, you know, 1.5 to 2 jobs, it makes it hard to participate in actively on a board like this.
So, who is apart from Ty, who actually lives in the city of Vancouver?
I do.
Oh, you do.
I do.
Okay.
So yeah, she's technically in the city of Vancouver. She's just on just east of 205.
Sure. I just wondered it.
One other kink for the elected officials to keep in mind is that our council members, the county council members, cannot be on the advisory board because it's set, because they're the final funding decisions are made by them.
Mm-hmm.
And so there has to be that separation of duties. So it limits down the elected officials that we have.
Ty lives in Vancouver also, doesn't he? That's what
he's downtown.
Downtown.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Other than Ty, I was wondering. It's interesting.
Any other questions about the board responsibilities?
I was just going to say that I think in general, having 15 people on a board is a little harder to manage in terms of logistics and meet discussion, although that's not necessarily a bad thing, but I do agree philosophically that it easier long term. But I also thought about that if you had certain nonprofits in an area or something that are talk to them about long term, that they're required to provide a low income rep for the board or something like that, like they do in Head Start, for example, that you have to participate in some way or that kind of thing. So, and I don't know, maybe that would be too complicated, but.
Well, and we'd rather stay away from having that requirement on one of our nonprofit agencies because they are already dealing with a lot of things as it is. But it is not something that we have not, we definitely have talked about it, and we will still keep having conversations about it to see how feasible it is to eventually get to the four districts. So So when you have a moment to sign that and turn that into Janet, we'll have that done. We have a couple extra, and it doesn't matter if there's doodles on it.
Bad habit.
The next thing in your packet should be the new board member roster, because you have a new board member, so you have all updated information. Hopefully it's in there.
Oh, yep, there it is.
Fantastic. And then just really quick, I wanted to go over two things that had come up this last week. One is the Matthew Desmond event on March 9th for the book Evicted. So there's been a little hiccup in the tickets. We're still working on it. But if you are interested in attending, which we highly recommend, just let me know. And we will work on getting tickets for the board members that are interested in going. And then we can look at carpooling options, since it is in downtown Portland. And then I also wanted to give a reminder of the Homeless and Housing Advocacy Day on February 2nd. And Michael will probably remind you also. Just as if you're interested in going, the advisory board can pay for your registration. It's $25. And we can hook you up with Andy Silver with Council for the Homeless, because he always gets a big group together as far as like carpooling up to that event.
And what day is that?
That one is on February 2nd.
I had two friends that were interested. Was one I emailed you about, but the other, there's two friends that would like to go to the Matthew. Should they just get their own ticket?
I'll work on that. Once I find out exactly how much we are going to pay, there's, if we have a large enough group, we can get group discounted rates. Washington State University was putting something together, and they were going to work with Council for the Homeless, but then they said, hey, hold on, we need to look at some stuff first. So we're just trying to figure out the technicalities on that. So I will definitely get back to you regarding that.
And I have one extra since I emailed.
Okay.
I had one that way.
Yeah, he's a great speaker. So we were lucky enough to see him at Housing Washington. So I'm excited to go. All right. That's all I have for board information.
Okay.
Just to add to that, somebody posted something on Facebook about a silent reading club where people just get together and read rather than have an agenda on books, etc. But there is a PDX group, and they are doing Evicted this.
The reading Evicted?
Oh, yeah. Cool. So, and I think there's a session coordinated by, maybe it was Mono or the library, but it's kind of an interesting concept. So.
Yeah.
Bridget, just so they get together and they read quietly and they don't talk about it?
They don't.
Okay.
Or everybody, they can't. But they don't have an agenda where they present. You know how book clubs tend to get.
Yeah.
It was like you might talk about books, but they also sit around in a coffee shop or wine bar and just drink and read. I love that.
Me too.
Mm-hmm. I do. I appreciate the opportunity to sit around and drink wine. So.
Yeah.
An enforced reading session. And it makes you do it, I guess.
That's awesome. I just thought you set up quiet or a private breathing. Okay, I'll join that one.
We'll be in the kitchen.
Okay, so we will move on to the approval of the November minutes. So this is where I'm supposed to ask for a motion. Any motion to approve the November minutes?
I will approve.
Great. Any second?
Second.
Great.
I don't know.
Probably no other discussion. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. And any opposed? Great. Looks like the November minutes can be signed.
They are.
Oh, are signed. Okay, very good. So let's move on to emergency food and
more items.
Sorry.
And board approval.
Oh, what was I doing?
Adoption
of the work plan.
I'm back. So in your packet. The work plan for 2017. So I want to remind you that this is a living document. We change it throughout the year. But this gives us an idea, a roadmap of what we're going to look for throughout 2017. So you can see there's a lot of information for today's meeting. Every meeting will include some sort of program report from one of the agencies. We will switch back and forth every other meeting from a housing program, and then what we consider a community action program, such as employment or the financial education type programs. We will try to have a legislative update at every meeting. We'll have our task force updates, both the advocacy and the community needs assessment at each meeting. And then we have a couple of special things that we do every year. In May, you'll see that we have the draft report to the community that we'll bring to you to review and then approve that in July. And then this year, and I don't have it on here because we just aren't real sure of the timeline, but we'll have the community needs assessment that will get adopted. So my hope is that we will have it for you by September to review to then adopt in November. But I am not committing to that timeline at this point. So those things will be in there. So we're just looking for an adoption of the work plan. And again, we'll adjust it as we need to as things change throughout the year.
Any discussion about the work plan? Okay. So then we can ask for a motion to approve the work plan for 2017.
I
make a motion.
Great.
I'll second.
Great. And any further discussion?
Question.
Mm-hmm.
just to make sure.
She was just waiting for
good.
It.
In May, when we review point in time count and Homeless Connect data, are there any activities that we engage in prior to reviewing that, or is that all done by somebody else?
So we'll bring Dale Whitley in and or Andy Silva, whoever is available, to actually talk about the data that was collected. The point in time count day is January
21st?
29th?
28th? Can't remember.
It's the last Thursday of the month.
Okay.
And so if you're interested in participating in that event, we highly recommend it. And you can contact David Philby, I believe,
mm-hmm.
for information on getting involved in that volunteer opportunity. You go out early in the morning. Thank you. You go out early in the morning throughout the county. They'll have teams that go out. And you are just basically looking for people who look like they're sleeping outdoors. And you ask them if they would be interested in filling out a very quick survey. Samantha and I were on a team last year and went through some downtown areas. We actually found the most people. We were super excited on that, so we did a good job. It was raining, but it was fun. It was our first time. This year, we're actually going to be volunteering at Project Homeless Connect, which is the same day, and that is at St. Luke's?
I don't remember.
St. John's?
I think it's Luke's.
St. Luke's Church. And so people who are homeless can come in, and there's a ton of services available for them to connect with, anything from getting feet washed to haircuts to VA benefits. I mean, they have a myriad of service providers there to connect people to programs that they may need. And you're more than welcome to volunteer at that event also.
It's a great event to volunteer for.
So this is my first year.
I did it 1 year and ended up this one guy who needed a really big jacket, and so I mean I stuck with it and found him a jacket, and it's kind of fun that you know to I'll keep looking for that jacket and they're finding it and giving it to me. Like
that's awesome. So we're excited to be volunteering at that event.
So in that job responsibilities there was a reference to participating in events. I feel like I haven't been doing that. So I see that as something about going to community events.
Yes.
Or
so it's not required.
No, but if you do, is part of the function to raise the profile of CAB and say you're there, you know, you're on CAB. Like I feel like a lot of people don't know there's a community
mm-hmm.
action advisory board. Is part of that function just
we would hope that
okay.
that would be a networking opportunity
yeah.
for you to talk about the advisory board. We're definitely not wanting to push you outside of where
no.
you feel comfortable. But if they're doing introductions, and you could say, I'm Bridget, and I am a
sure.
member of the Community Action Advisory Board, and we have our brochures and stuff that I can get for you guys, extra copies if you want to keep them with you, and hand them out as needed. So that's So I'll make sure that I bring those at the next meeting.
But in answer, so yes, but I think just as important as any raising the profile of the CAD board is by participating in the community, you're staying connected to the community. So mm-hmm. you know, so I guess you know, in that board responsibility board role, it's like yes, if you're a board member, you're representing the board, you're advocating for the board, you're raising awareness of the board. But I think in terms of participating in these community meetings and community activities related to low income, you know, you're staying connected to what is happening in the community that revolves around, you know, that affects low income persons, and that's just as important or even right. more important. Okay.
And bringing that back here.
Yeah, when you're making those funding decisions.
I don't know quite how to phrase it. If we wanted to make a presentation to like Battleground City Council, I don't know whether CAB has ever done that or not. Mm-hmm. Is that something that we might look into, or that do we have any connection with the Battleground City Council, or?
You know, I don't think we've ever done any actual presentations to any of the city councils. It's something that we could definitely look into doing. We could have board members do it. We could, you know, staff could help support you guys in doing that, or we could do that.
I'd be very happy to do that if it would be helpful.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it would be great information.
So should we reach
that's
out to all
I
of
think
our
I just did, but I didn't know I was maybe supposed to.
No, totally. No, totally. Whatever. It's what you feel comfortable with.
Also, with that's civic organizations like Chamber of Commerce or that sort of thing, would that be something?
I think the more we can get the information out about the Community Action Advisory Board, the better.
Well, I'm on two other boards, and then my non-volunteer stuff. So if I can get whatever printed information we have, I will drop it off anywhere. Everywhere. I've been to meetings, but I just say, hey, can I put this stuff out?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's really hard for, I don't know, for some reason the community doesn't know all their resources. And when I got my kids, I had to really dig deep for my resources. Mm-hmm. So anything that I can give to the community, I feel is more power mm-hmm. for those people that need it.
Well, and I gotta say too, it really is amazing. I mean, because I work in this every single day, and so it really is amazing and cool for me to see the work that we do on the CAB and see that kind of come full circle.
Yeah.
So an example of that is that we just opened a Family Resource Center in Battleground Schools, and I'm working with Share to have that backpack program that we funded. So they're able to bring me those backpacks to the Family Resource Center. I get 4 a week. So that if I have a family that comes in and they're hungry, I can at least hand them some food until I can get them connected with some other resources.
Yeah.
So it really is awesome, and I just really strongly encourage everybody to shout from the rooftops the work that we're doing and how important it really is, and to see that actually come full circle and benefit families that we work with really is cool.
I would be willing to work on putting together something that could be delivered to different groups like that.
Mm.
Let me get the brochure that I created out,
okay.
So you can at least start with that. I can email it to you, but I definitely don't have any problem making sure that we print it and have it there.
Is there someone else? You want to work with me on that?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Maybe we could do it like a PowerPoint presentation.
Yeah, that's what I'm, something like that, that we can keep it short, 5-minute
mm-hmm.
presentation.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what CAB is?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I have a feeling that probably 90% of the people there would not have a clue.
Yep.
Well, you know, having sat through a lot of council meetings in the last year or so, it seems like people think that council primarily deals with zoning and property
exactly.
variation
right.
and things. And they don't have discussions about, say, social issues very much there. And I think raising the profile of CAB to help them understand that we are funding all these different initiatives in the community. Because I don't think the people who watch those CBTV programs really know that the county plays such a big role in funding, you know, people like Share and things like that. So raising the profile of the
mm-hmm.
whole board would be really...
Or even the
not
court...
Not the board, the actions, yeah.
The court system and the
yeah.
juvenile justice and all of that is not I've been listening, and I have not heard any of that, and it's a huge part of the county budget, and I mean, that's a little different than this, but still.
Yeah.
That's why I like the idea of meeting with one particular rep, because then I could say, okay, John Blum's mine. Let's talk about other things besides zoning.
Well, I listened to Multnomah County Council meeting, and they spent the entire session discussing what early learning opportunities there were. And, you know, they actually gave $1 million to United Way for some initiative. So it's a little different. But I thought I'd never heard our council have much of a discussion. They do when it's connected to property in some way. So I think building that would be really neat.
Yeah, there's a lot of advocating that we need to do. I'm advocating that we move our meeting along, only because we have so much to go through today. So we just need to finalize the adoption.
Okay, so do we have a motion to approve the 2017 work plan?
We already have a motion. Oh, and a second.
And a second. We had discussion.
Sorry.
Okay. So all in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Any opposed? Okay. The motion passes. So the 2017 work plan is approved. Rebecca, emergency food and shelter priorities.
Yes, actually, Sam is here to talk about this. And before she gets up here, and I want to just really, she deserves a round of applause, because we would not have received any funds if not for Sam taking the initiative. So I'll let her explain the process that she had to go through to get us these funds. But you may remember earlier this year we talked about how we weren't going to get any emergency food and shelter program funds this year because we didn't hit the criteria. And so
you mean the county?
The county, yes.
Just demographically.
Correct, sorry. And so Sam worked and she got us some funds. And so now we're here to ask the board to approve the priority the priorities for the funding. So.
Okay. Well, thank you, Sam.
Good morning. Thanks for having me. So Rebecca just said everything that I was going to say, and we ended up, the process is really boring. What the interesting thing is that we ended up with a total of $247,078 for this year. In previous years, it's been split between the three categories, shelter, rent, and food, and we are proposing this year to shift it a little bit more toward the housing because of the housing crisis. So the proposal is 40% shelter, 40% rent or mortgage assistance, and 20% food. And then the recommended funding on the table at the bottom, the right-hand column, $49,500 would go to the Clark County Food Bank. We're proposing no funding to the Interfaith Treasure House, but that is because Salvation Army also serves East County with rent mortgage assistance, and Interfaith is such a small agency with such a small request that administratively it didn't make sense to give them reduced funding from the $7,000. $22,375 to Janice Youth for shelter, Share requested $71,000, but we're proposing $58,403 for shelter. And then Salvation Army, St. Vincent de Paul, our rent and mortgage assistance, and the YWCA also provides shelter and proposed $18,000 to award to them.
Okay.
So I think in the past you've just approved the percentages, but if you want to approve the funding amounts,
so we will just roll forward with a motion then, a request for a motion. So thank you for those details, Sam. Mm-hmm. Do you want to stick around in case we have more questions?
Of course.
Just a second. So any motion to approve the priority funding?
I had a question.
Mm-hmm.
So moved.
Is this the time or wait to?
Well, I guess we're supposed to.
Wait till there's a motion.
Yeah.
I made a motion.
Okay.
Somebody want a second?
Any second.
I'll second.
Okay.
Okay, now
let's discuss.
Now I'm gonna ask you a question. When you listed the total requested and recommended, did you do that strictly on percentage?
Yeah, we reduced them by the same amount. So, like, if the total funding request was $347,000, and we had to get it down to $247,000. We reduced it off the top so that they all were equally
affected,
and then split it by the 40-40-20.
Okay, that's what I wonder, because I didn't know if it was based on their individual assistance programs
mm-hmm.
or just a
just
rote category.
Yeah.
I guess my question would be, with those reduced funding amounts,
mm-hmm.
is that going to enable them to really be able to carry out that work?
Last year, we received a total of $238,648, and all of these agencies were funded. So
mm-hmm.
it's going to be a similar amount to what they
okay.
have worked with in the past.
Okay.
Do they all have similar criteria for eligibility?
Yes, there's an EFSP manual that they have to follow.
Okay.
So I can get you those details if you want to know how that program works.
Okay.
It's one of the very few programs that will allow for mortgage assistance, which is interesting.
Hmm. Okay.
Great.
Any other discussion? Okay. So we're up for a vote then. All in favor?
Aye.
And any opposed? Motion again passes.
Yeah,
thank you,
so
Sam.
Much.
Appreciate it. Okay. So we will move on to the Advocacy Task Force update. Cherie and Michael, anything you would like to add about that?
First of all, we're looking to have the board approve the or adopt the strategic action plan, and that's the sheet that we've come up with. And also ask that you challenge yourself to try to find new forms of advocacy. And so that's also, you know, with the little chart here, too. And we would also like to thank Ty for his training a couple months ago. He did a good job at doing that. And let's see. And that we've created, let's see, the CAB Advocacy Action Packet is created to answer questions on common questions regarding, you know, what advocacy and to help members think about our passion focus for the year. And, also remind you that February 2nd will be an advocacy day up in Olympia. So, again, if you want to go, talk to Rebecca or Michael about that. And the task force will meet early this year to focus on progressing the action plan. And
very similar to what we were talking about just a little bit ago about.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So maybe we don't have to do anything. Maybe they've already done it.
Oh, no.
No,
because the bottom line is advocacy comes from all of you. The advocacy task force is just there to provide a little bit of structure and ideas on how to do that advocacy. So I guess, so thank you, that's great. And the only things that I would add is please approve the advocacy plan that is proposed. Again, let us know if you want to participate in the housing advocacy task day on February 2nd. I've done it before. It's very empowering, very fun. And as Rebecca mentioned, you know, we can assist with funding that. It's allowed with CSBG funds. And that's really it. So you have the action plan, you have the action packet to help guide you if you meet with legislators and give you ideas on how to do some advocacy.
Excellent. Thank you both.
And just to let you know,
uh-huh.
the 2nd is a Thursday.
Okay.
So if you have any questions, again.
Excellent.
What,
perfect. Thank you.
What does CNA stand for?
Community needs assessment. Oh, I'm sorry.
That, and
oh.
you're going to see hear about the community needs
yeah,
assessment
okay.
in a moment. But yeah, that's,
no,
oh, absolutely.
That.
So that's
yeah.
that's the survey.
Yep. Excellent.
Sherry, who else
great,
was
so
besides you and Mike were involved in
Well, Michael just recently kind of took over because Kate Budd had started us, and then Lydia, and then Paula were...
And Ty.
Were putting this together, and it was fun. Excellent. At least I had a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. It's been great. So thank you.
So you need a motion.
Yes. We will ask for a motion to approve the advocacy plan moving forward.
I would like to propose a motion.
Okay. Any second?
Second.
Okay. And any discussion? Perfect. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Any opposed? None. So the motion once again passes. Wow, I'm getting good at this. Thank you, Rebecca. So, Rebecca, we're going to have quite a lengthy discussion about the community needs assessment.
Yes.
Thank you.
So I have a presentation, so Judith, you might want to turn around so that you can see. And I have quite a lot of information to go over with you guys. So you guys know we've been working on the community needs assessment. And a big part of the community needs assessment is the survey that we did to the low-income community. So we thought, now that we have some of the information, that we've been looking at some of the information, we would bring back to you an initial look at the survey results. So this is a very light look at the data itself.
That better.
Thank you. We will be doing more in-depth analysis of the information as we move forward. But even at this level of review, there were some surprises from the data and some assumptions that we had to make, and I'll explain those as we go along. So the community needs assessment is a requirement of the Community Services Block Grant Act, and there's the section if you want to go and look and verify that I'm doing all this extra work because maybe I just really love to bug people. The purpose of the community needs assessment is to collect and analyze data about the needs of our community that have low incomes. It's to inform future funding decisions and to inform policy and program decisions. This version that we're going to, that we've been working through is quite more involved than what we've ever done in the past. And we are hoping that we can really use this not as just another report that we put on the shelf, but something that we can really keep alive and use for a lot of discussions that we have over the next few years. We're laying the foundation for the next community needs assessment. So this one is taking us quite a while. We're really spending a year and a half going through this process. And the next one won't take us quite so long because we'll have a foundation to work from. So some facts about the community needs assessment. The CAB needs to adopt the CNA by the end of 2017. That way we can stay close to being in compliant with the organizational standards. Part of the CNA requires feedback from clients. And so that is why we do the survey. So that meets a large portion of what the needs assessment requirements are. The task force provided valuable feedback when we were putting the survey together. So we really appreciate the work of the task force to come back and help us make it better than the version that we drafted. The survey was open from July 1st through September 30th, so plenty of time for people to complete the survey. The survey was available in hard copy and online. The online version was in English only. However, we have learned of some new technologies that we can use in the future so that we'll be able to put it in more languages online. But the hard copies were available in English, Spanish, and Russian. And we distributed the survey through over 65 organizations and online. Some of those are the food banks and the 36 food pantries throughout the county, housing and employment agencies. We worked closely with schools, faith-based entities, and then the online distribution is a public service announcement that goes out, and then it's also copied to the county's public information office media sources. So there's a whole lot of them that got access to the survey information also. We were very happy that we received 1,165 total responses 230 of them were online, 935 of them were by hard copy. That's about 300 more than we got the last survey. The hard copy responses, we had just over 1,000 of them in English, 38 that were in the Spanish version, and 60 in the Russian version. We did ask on the survey how you heard about it, and we had to scrunch these down into some categories because there were probably 100 different ways people heard about it, and so these are kind of the categories I was able to put it through. Because there's so many food banks and they work so closely with their clients, they actually would hand the survey out to each person as they were waiting in line. They were able to get a lot of people to complete the survey. So we had 414 people indicate that the food bank was how they heard about the survey. Through that online media source, which includes the Colombian, the Reflector, there's some minority media agencies, including the El Hispanic News and the Filipino American Association of Vancouver and Vicinity. We had 205 responses. Another online, we sent it out through the Nextdoor app, the county did, and there were quite a few that indicated that the Nextdoor app was how they heard about the survey. I was surprised at how many came through there. We had over 100 from housing providers, 64 through friend and family members, which is great because that means, you know, they're getting the word out and they're talking about it. And so that's what we want to have happen. We had 34 indicate employment providers, 17 through forums and presentations, such as I went to the Smith Tower and spoke with the residents there, the faith-based organization, Evergreen Faith-Based Coffee and the Vancouver Faith-Based Coffee. I did presentations there. So we really wanted to get out as far and wide as we possibly could. So this presentation is a lot of data. And so I really wanted to make it a little lighter where we could. And baby animals are all the rave in presentations. So I thought we would cut these through with some really cute pictures. So I love my kitties, so we started off with a kitty picture. So the next few slides are looking at some of the basic information that we derived from the needs sections of the survey. So one of the questions that we asked the respondents was to rank their top five overall needs. There were 15 needs listed in this question, and when we looked at the data, there were really four that just rose to the top as far as what their needs were. When we looked at just the information from this question, we were able to break it down in two ways. So the first way was we just took a look and we counted how many times each of the needs came up as any one of their top five needs. So it could be first, third, fifth, didn't matter. We counted it, we tallied it. So with that, our top four needs were food assistance, housing assistance, utility assistance, and employment assistance. We were a little surprised that utility assistance came up so high, especially above employment services. And that some of the other services didn't show there was a significant drop between this 316 number to the next one down, which was like just over 200 responses for the next category.
Were health services part of that?
It was quite low. That was one of the things that we were thought was interesting. So the second way we looked at this, because when we started pulling this information, we noticed, well, utility assistance came out as number three. But if you look at the number one and number two priorities only, employment came out higher as a first priority need than utility assistance did. So it came up 87 times for employment services, but only 62 times for utility assistance. So we will be diving more into this information, but this was just a brief look at that question and how, you know, the different ways you look at the information will give you, tell you a different story. Are there any questions about this?
And just before I leave that slide, that's really important to understand because, you know, one thing we're asking, hey, just give us in these broad categories what your top needs are. And there's the raw number of those four rows to the top in just like just you know, number of people that responded, these four are my top needs. But when asked how do I rank, like, my 1, 2, 3 priority needs, you know, it does break out a little bit differently. You know, so, like, if you look at the housing assistance was ranked as number one as the top priority need above food assistance. You know, there are 223 people listed as their number one priority as opposed to 279. You know, so that's the kind of nuance that we're delving into. And sorry to interrupt you.
Oh, no, totally fine. Yeah. I appreciate the extra information.
The other thing that really comes to mind for me, as far as the food assistance being at the top, in all honesty, and again, I work in this every single day, I feel like in our county, we have really good resources for food. We have really good programs. So I'm wondering, is it... I would hesitate for us to just jump on, fully funding more food programs when maybe the solution could be helping folks access the resources that are already available.
Well, and we also, talked about this. One of the other things to consider is that we had 414 responses from people who are at food banks. So, yes,
right.
Food is going to be,
right.
For a third of our respondents, they were going to access food. Mm-hmm. So that's going to influence some of this these numbers, which is why we worked so hard to distribute this through so many different types of agencies. So in the past, we know that the food bank responses significantly outweighed all of the other agencies that were providing us with the survey. So this is actually a better rounded than we've ever been able to get before. Next time we do the survey, we'll make it even better. So we're getting there. But yes, food, if you're going in for food, obviously you're gonna need food assistance. So it'll rank more often. So the other section, part of this survey, was broken down into domains. There's 6 domains or categories. And each domain had the question, do you have a need in this category for an adult or a youth in your household, yes or no? Based on that question, the yes responses of that question, we were able to rank the domains, the categories, and what the needs were in the community. We counted the number of yes responses, determined the priority of the domains. Online responses were required to answer yes or no. They couldn't move forward with the survey without it. For the hard copy responses, what we did is if they did not indicate yes or no or did not list a need under that section of the survey, we considered it a no. So that's how we, one of the assumptions we kind of made going through this data. One surprise for us when we were looking at this information is that asset building is the number 3 domain or category need, and it's above employment. So we were quite surprised. So now we're going to look a little bit closer at the top 3 needs. So the top domain is housing with 604 responses. So one thing to keep in mind is that there, besides online with the yes, no question, nobody's required to answer these questions. So we know that not every person answered all of the questions throughout the survey. So we got 604 responses for the housing domain that they said, yes, they needed some sort of service for their household. And so these are the top 3 for each. We broke it down by the adult responses and then also by the youth responses. So you could see the differences.
Just so I can keep it in my mind, I'm sorry to interrupt, Rebecca.
You're fine.
What was the total number of responses?
1,165.
Okay, thank you.
So that last one on the youth, finding housing to rent.
Yes.
The other two are sort of parallel. Did we ask that question of adults?
Yes.
No,
so
no.
They're the exact same needs.
Okay.
And I brought a sample of the survey because I thought somebody might want to know. So this shows here, yes or no, and then you have for adults, and then you have for youth.
So where were the adult responses in that finding housing to rent category?
So these are...
She's asking how it ranked out compared to...
Oh, finding
it's
rent.
It's number 3 for you, thanks.
Finding housing to rent came 4th for adults.
Okay.
I wrote it down because I was ready for that one. we're not really surprised by these answers being high because we know we're in a housing crisis.
Right.
What we did find surprising was that emergency shelter for adults ranked 11th out of 13 options. That we were so surprised about seeing down so low.
Yeah, so, and I'm really surprised about that, especially I've been hearing, and this is not a criticism at all, but like the city of Vancouver has been getting a lot of pressure for good reasons that there needs to be more emergency shelter capacity in this community, and I think there's good data to support that is true. But when we've looked at you know, just ask for feedback on the needs, not only was emergency shelter really low as a housing need, you know, 11th out of 13 possible needs, even when we broke it down into how many out of those that identified as being homeless, the need for emergency shelter still ranked below having affordable or subsidized housing, having rent assistance, and move-in cost assistance. So even, you know, drilling it down to the individuals that were saying they were homeless, it was still a pretty low priority for them.
But honestly, in a way, it doesn't surprise me because a lot of families that I work with, they'd rather live in their car with grandma than, you know, in an emergency shelter environment, especially if they have kids.
And I can comment on that. My brother is homeless. He has been for years. And he would rather live in a travel trailer than go to a homeless shelter. So he remodeled a travel trailer and is sitting in my driveway. And I'd rather have them there than have them lost in the system where I couldn't help my niece. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
The other thing is nobody wants to go to emergency shelter. They want to find housing or get some help, but the story in the paper this morning was quite telling in a way. I mean, somebody who wants to get that, but the costs, first of all, finding it, and then the moving costs and the barriers, you're really not going to prioritize emergency shelter housing.
Especially thinking of this weather, you know, if you're exposed to the elements, if you're unsheltered, you know, just to give you an idea, 137 individuals selected homeless or some variant of you know, doubled up living, you know. Out of those, only 20 prioritized shelter out of 137. So, you know, it's I was surprised. And I'll just leave it at that. Yeah. I mean, I don't want to read into it too much.
And we're going to do more of this in-depth analysis where we're looking at specific populations and what their actual responses are as we move forward. So here, again, just an initial look at what we saw. This is basically counting responses at this point. The second domain was the health and social behavioral health category. And there were 588 responses. Not surprising, seeing a dentist came out as the most often need for both adults and youth. Even with the Affordable Care Act, getting dental coverage or getting access to a dentist is still very difficult. Since the last survey, food assistance and seeing a dentist swap places in priority needs. So on the last survey, food assistance was number one and seeing a dentist was number two. So it did switch. So it's gotten improved a little bit, but not much. More interesting to me was how high exercise and fitness classes ranked for both adults and youth. I mean, that's amazing to have that be something that's consciously on their mind. Another point to note is seeing a doctor ranked fifth for adults out of 17 total needs. It's lower than the previous survey, which was came in third place, but still higher than expected after the passing of the Affordable Care Act. And then the third highest need is
So with the Medicaid expansion, our county has close to 124,000 people on Medicaid, so a fourth of our population.
Wow.
The problem is dentists won't accept the Medicaid because the reimbursement is so low. So even though they have insurance, they can't get access. And there was some legislation, a couple sessions, where there were opportunities in healthcare authority, Department of Health, and other to try to do like dental assistance, who will see some of the population, but the dental association fought it, so that legislation died. So there has to be some strategies to get people access to health care. Now with the new federal administration, we'll have to see what happens. But just to let you know, that's some reason why you see some of that.
You're seeing the rise.
Do we have more than, I know Battleground has the one free health care facility. Are there others?
So there's the main free clinic, and then there's also
New Heights.
There's New Heights, and then there's we just funded them not too long ago. Why can't I think of that? New Day Dental. They are also do a lot of dental services. They're booked months out, which is when we funded them, half the reason they couldn't get do a lot of services for our clients is because they were just so busy with dealing with Medicaid services. So, and I believe there's still a couple more I can't think of at the top of my head, but so there are a few, but again, months on the waiting list to get in. The third was asset building. Again, this was a surprise that it came up so high. There were 461 responses for having a need in this category. So the credit repair and the financial assistance to buy a home for adults makes a lot of sense because people are coming out to the other side of the recession and they're ready to really fix their credit and then get back into buying another home. So that's not surprising at all to see the top two listed there for adults. For the youth, there's been a lot of activity recently for advocating to bring financial education classes back into the high school, so I'm sure you guys have heard about it. The Asset Building Coalition is a strong advocate to bring this back into the high school, so we can see that it's a need. It's really from the youth that's what they're wanting to move forward.
As far as schools are concerned, the current plan is to start personal finance training, and I believe it's third grade.
Oh, and that'll be awesome.
From third grade through 12th grade.
Yes. And the Asset Building Coalition has been sponsoring some trainings. They go in for a day and do some things in some of the local schools. So they're trying to get more training out there for youth also. All right, cuteness break. Funny thing about this, my daughter, my 14-year-old, has been bugging me for a teacup pig for months now, and I keep telling her no because if you really look at the definition of a teacup pig, it's like up to 100 pounds. And I don't need anything that large in my house. I have enough craziness going on as it is. But then she saw this. I made her sit through my presentation with me. It was torture for a 14-year-old. And she's like, look, Mom, they're the size of a strawberry. And I was like, yeah, I don't think that necessarily happens. So
it's a baby.
That one is a very tiny. And they do have little tiny, tiny ones, but the likelihood of getting one of those is not going to happen. And my cat would probably eat it, so. So now we're going to move into the demographics, information that we responded. One thing we wanted to let you know is that we purposely did not include a definition for low income. We felt that the title of the survey being 2016 Clark County Low Income Community Needs Survey, the information that was provided as the description of the survey itself, the marketing that we did for the survey, and the distribution method really pushed it to people who fit our demographics to fill out the survey. And then we did ask later in the survey about income, for them to self-disclose income. So we were able to take a look at it a little bit more closely. So the first several questions were really about the person filling out the question. The first question we had was to what your age is and what category. And those brackets, those age ranges are based on HUD, HMIS information. So we kind of crossed over funding sources for some of this information in the survey. What is interesting here is that the not surprising is that we had 24 to 44 was the most common age range for people to have filled out the survey, followed by ages 55 to 69. So we have, and then we have 75 for 70 and plus. So we did get quite a few seniors responses, and then mid-age range. But we did have 33 responses for youth up to age 17, and then youth up to age 23. So we got a nice round selection for surveys being completed.
So those youth questions earlier, were the 12 to 17 year olds or
so
12 to 23?
In each of the domains, it could have been a youth filling it out, or it could be a parent filling it out as a need for their child. So we asked, then we asked, what gender do you identify with? And not surprising, the majority of them were female. There, and Michael made me look this up because I was like, women tend to fill out surveys more often than men. There's actually a study from San Jose State University by a doctor.
I don't remember.
Oh, I can't remember. Smith, Wills something. To prove my point. So I will say that there's been a study done that women do, depending on your demographics that you're actually giving it out to, obviously. But women do tend to fill out surveys more often than men. What we were really happily surprised was that we had 5 people actually identify as being transgender fill out the survey. So it may not seem like very many, but out of 1,000 responses, to have 5 of them, that's great. We know that we're really getting out there.
Before you move on, this is not specific to the gender, but one thing we are trying to do as we go through this is just kind of as a quality assurance piece, check ourselves and things like that. So like when we see, oh wow, like, you know, 2/3 of respondents are women, how does this compare statistically? How does it compare to a scientific norm with surveys? You know, and I'm pretty happy to say so far what we have seen is the results we're getting back, I think, are pretty credible. Mm-hmm. You know, like in terms of coverage, in terms of proportions of response and stuff like that.
So the next question was, what is your race? Now this one, I'm sorry, I know this is a little crowded. Oh, you know what? I'm so sorry. I have packets. Would you mind handing these out?
Of this, my whole presentation for you, so you have copies of it.
What we wanted to do was take a look and check, as like Michael was saying, check ourselves. Make sure that we are getting a distribution of responses from the age, the race, the location, you know, throughout Clark County. And this is one of them that we could do using American Community Survey data from 2011 through 2015. What I do want to keep and let you know about is this is not a direct comparison. It's as close as we could get. The data for the survey respondents, which is this third column here, that's from our survey. Those are the individual person that is filling out the survey. For the Clark County population and the Clark County population below the federal poverty limit numbers, that is everyone. So it's everybody in the household. So we cannot make the assumption that the person responding, if they have 2 kids, those kids are also in the same race category. So we couldn't make that leap. So that's kind of an odd thing here. So keep that kind of tidbit in the back. But when we looked at the information, look how close we are in every category. So there's, out of the entire county's population, 85% are white. Out of the low income that fall under the federal poverty level is 77%, and we had 69%. Which means our numbers were better in the minority categories. So this we added in, this is just non-white. Basically all it is that we added up all of the other minorities except for don't know and other. I believe other actually is in that number, to give an idea of what the numbers were here. And so one thing is the American Community Survey does not let you say, I don't know. You have to put yourself into a box. However, we gave that option on the survey, so that's why it's here and there's no data for the first, for the county and the poverty level data information. We're very happy to see how these numbers turned out, that we are in there, and sometimes better than the actual county population.
And the only other thing, again, not specific to the race piece that we're doing is, number one, try not to do any assumptions, but just take the answer as reflected in the survey. Mm-hmm. But number two, whenever we feel that forced to make an assumption, to check ourselves and make sure that assumption is a reasonable and similar to what other surveys would do. You know, it'd be a valid assumption to make. And three, we're writing that assumption down. So anytime we've made an assumption, we've only made it when we've absolutely had to. It's been consistent with the way other surveys make assumptions, and we are recording it, you know, so that we, if there's any question or anything like that, we can go back and deconstruct that.
And that also will help us the next time, because then we can take a look at, we had to make assumptions about these types of things. How can we better make the survey so we don't have to make these assumptions?
So if you were a pollster and you were looking at below FPL, a statistically significant sample would be way lower than that, right?
If I'm understanding your question, yes. Like, you know, what we're getting back is a statistically significant, you know, it's statistically
it's really
valid. And we had a consultant that helped us with that.
Yeah.
And
it's really high.
Lydia, did you have a question?
Well, I was just wondering, I'm sure this isn't an issue, but the non-white, that's where folks identified themselves as non-white, but not necessarily into one of the other categories.
No. So actually, we created this just for this chart.
Okay.
Basically, it is added up the numbers
okay.
for multiracial
okay.
American Indian, Black,
gotcha.
Asian.
Okay.
And then just so that it's an easy compare, you can easily look at
yep.
this information here and
gotcha.
Get 100% for each of those
yep.
or near 100%. And then you can break it down by minority classification.
So we always have a problem here because of the Slavic community not fitting into any ACS ethnic group. Where are they?
So this is race. The next slide is about ethnicity.
Okay.
Ha. Are we ready to move? Can we move on? To answer your question.
Yay, yay.
So as per, you know, we knew that our non-Hispanic, non-Latino would be the majority of the responses that we did. We did get 95 that identified as Hispanic or Latino,
mm-hmm.
91 that mentioned that they were Slavic or Russian, and we had 88 that didn't know. So, but we had 802 of the respondents answer the specific question. When we look at the Hispanic and the Slavic answers, that came out to 23.2% of the people responding, so that's a really decent response rate. When we look at the ACS data, just as a comparison for 2011 through 2015, they don't ask about Slavic or Russian, they only ask about Hispanic or Latino, but for that category, it's 22.7%. So we're really good when we're looking at the overall population. Any other questions about this information? All right, you ready?
Oh.
Okay.
But that one's not yours.
None of these are mine.
Oh.
No. I do have some cute animals, but no, these are not mine. These are Google.
Very cute.
So the previous slides were talking about asking the person who's responding. The following slides are going to be more family-focused questions. So the first was, what is the size of your family? So we have a nice distribution of family sizes that responded to the survey. What I thought was really interesting is that if you look, so the number one response was one person. The second highest response was two people. The third highest response was three people. The fourth highest was four people. I mean, and it just goes on down.
I'm seeing a pattern.
It was interesting. You don't expect to have those patterns that are very obvious come out. So,
except for the eight people.
And that's eight plus.
Yeah.
So you could probably consider they are still going down in the numbers if we were to go farther into how many people are in there. So that was interesting. Then we asked, what type of health insurance does your family have? So we had 992 responses, so they answered this question, but they were able to select all that apply. So they were able to indicate more. So if you were to add these numbers, they're going to add up way above the 992. Actually, it adds up to 1,233 selections that were made. So you would have people that are receiving Medicaid and private insurance in their home. They might get private insurance, their kids might be on Medicaid, that type of thing. So I was surprised to see 90 in this population that indicated that they did not have any insurance. They should, for the most part, qualify for the Affordable Care Act. So there haven't been access to for some reason. So that's the number that we want to work on. Then we went and asked them.
Rebecca, yes. A question. Could this include also people that are undocumented?
They can, but we wouldn't know. We didn't ask that question.
Because that could be a reason why some people don't insure.
What is the source of your family's income? So again, another select all that apply. So you'll see there's 857 responses, but they total up to way over that. They total up to 1,028.
Yeah. Wow.
This was a question that we realized as we were entering the data that wasn't as clear as we had hoped. So our intention was that those who are on any form of Social Security, disability, just general Social Security, that they would indicate this category, but we found that that didn't happen, that there was some confusion. Some actually put it under the other total, so we left it there for now. And then we've already started drafting the next survey, and we fixed it. So now it'll just say Social Security, so that way we can reduce some of that confusion that we found happened during this one. Other things that were under the other total were alimony and child support, VA disabilities, odd jobs, second mortgage, selling their possessions, foster care, which was interesting, rent from others, and friends and family support. So there were quite a few other options that were selected.
But the earned income is work.
Yes, earned income.
And there's no duplication with SSR. When you said there was confusion around the SSR, that seems really high.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Well, actually, first of all, this is in a family, so a family can absolutely have income from both someone working and from someone, receiving some kind of benefit. The second piece is, you'd think it'd look high, but you'll see some data later on that it'll look, I'd hold on to that question.
And you can be on SSI, SSDI, and be employed. You have a certain number of hours that you have to stay under or amount that you earn. But there's a big misnomer. A lot of people don't realize that they can work and still be on SSI and SSDI. And that's one of the things that we've been looking at as far as our permanent supported housing programs is really saying, hey, you can work, even if it's 5 hours a week. It's something that was going to help you in your housing situation and just in your overall well-being as you move forward.
If they do, it used to be, I don't know what it still is. If I work and I'm on SSI, then that amount is deducted from?
You can work to a certain amount before it affects any of your benefits.
Okay.
Yep.
That's mine. Sorry about that.
So I'm just going to briefly show this slide, but this is when we asked what your current or last known zip code is, so you can see that it's a nice distribution throughout the zip codes in the area. But what we found, we thought we would display this in a little bit more fun way for you guys. So this is a zip code map of Clark County, and what it shows is that we received survey responses from every single zip code in Clark County. 98601, way up in the corner, we had 15 responses. Washougal, we had 50 responses. 968675, we had 6 responses. So we had a nice distribution throughout the county. So we also had a few, not very many, that were from other areas. 27 didn't know. One was the 98666, which is the downtown PO box. We're fairly certain this was somebody from Share House because that's the address they give for mailing, but we can't verify it, so we don't know for sure. We had one from Stevenson. That's not unexpected because a lot of times they'll come into Washougal to get services. We had Longview, same thing. They'll come down from Cowlitz County every once in a while. But we did have Bellingham, and I'm probably going to Hussam or Husum, exactly sure. But that's further north, so.
But just one.
Yes, one of each. So it's the heart, nothing that we're
really
worried about.
Nice distribution.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, great survey.
So we thought you guys would be really interested to see how does it look for your districts.
Mm-hmm.
Here you go. Except I did find a typo. This number should be 246 to match this number here. We did have to do a little bit of fudging. Zip code boundaries do not match our districts perfectly, I'm sad to report. But it wasn't difficult to say, no, that's the majority of it's in this district and stuff. So we were able to create this. We love this distribution. We expect the most responses to be down in Vancouver where there's so many services that are available. But North County was right behind, so that's awesome. And we had 246 from out on the east side. So we had a great response distribution from our survey. So this is fantastic news. So then the next question was, has anyone served in the armed forces? And we have 236 respondents indicated that yes, they did. That's 22.7% of the respondents. This was probably the most surprising thing we've come across so far. So our question was, does anyone in your family have a disability or special need? Exactly half said yes, somebody does. It's amazing. We were not expecting to see the number this high whatsoever. We do want to keep in mind that we did not define what a special need is. However, in context, because it's next to disability, it kind of gives it that idea of what we're looking for. The term special need is used by HUD and encompasses different types of disabilities, such as physical and mental health issues, along with individuals who have HIV and AIDS, and there's a few others.
But it also aligns pretty closely with those two graphs related to income. With SSI.
Exactly.
So,
and this is what Michael was alluding to, was this information was coming up. This surprised us. This was probably the biggest thing we've noticed so far, just taking an initial look at them. So we asked what your current housing situation is, and this was one that we did have to do, make a couple of assumptions for. We had some online respondents who had the option of putting an other in and stating what that was, who had mentioned that they live in a mobile home. We know that most mobile homes are, and they indicated that they owned their mobile home, but we know that the majority of them are in a park where they have rental fees for the land. So if they were to lose their income, then they would not be able to pay for the rental space, therefore they would lose their housing. So we put those under rent, and that's one of those assumptions that we wrote down. Because there is the chance of losing that. You'll notice that doubled up and homeless are colored in the same color because depending on what definition you're using, if you're using HUD's definition, homeless is homeless, literally homeless. But if you're using McKinney-Vento, then doubled up is also considered homeless. So we wanted to separate the information but show how it relates there. We're not surprised at how many people fill out the survey that rent. I was kind of surprised to see so many owners fill out the survey. So the next question was, how many families are employed? This one actually started off with two questions in the survey. The questions were, how many family members are employed part-time? How many family members are employed full-time? And we asked them to write in a number. What we did to get to this basic information was basically went through and entered if they indicated that at least one person was working either full-time or part-time, that they were at least working. And that's how we came with the 469 of the 697 responses as being employed. We've made another assumption here that if they entered zero under either full-time or part-time, but did not answer the other question, that they were intending that they weren't working at all. So those ones ended up in the no family members employed. If they did not answer the question at all, there was no indication in there whatsoever, they are the other responses. That's why we have 697 out of the total 1,165.
So we didn't make an assumption at all.
Correct.
Just an answer.
Wonder why they didn't answer.
The survey's long, and some people feel that it's more information than they care to give. There's many reasons that they wouldn't fill it out. So, but we take what we can out of the information that we've got. One of the good news is that 63% of the people that indicated that they were that answered this question indicated that there was some sort of employment in their household. The bad news is that of those households, the majority consider themselves as being low income. So, and unfortunately, it's 60% of the people didn't respond to the question at all.
Where in the survey was, were these questions?
It was in the demographics section.
I mean, in the end or the beginning?
Yes, it's, so it's this question here. So it's quite a ways through.
Okay.
The next question was where we asked, again, two questions. How does your family, or what, where do your family fall in the income level? We asked regarding 125% and 200% of the federal poverty level. 125% is the requirement, the eligibility requirement for the community services block grant funds. We have other local dollars that we use that go up to 200% of the federal poverty level, which is why we designated these two amounts. What of the 930 people that responded to this question, 92% earn less than 200% of the federal poverty level. So a very high number of the respondents fit into what we were really looking for as far as the respondents of our survey. Just to give you an idea, a family of four at 200% of the federal poverty level earns $48,600 or less per year. When we look at the 125% federal poverty level data, 73.5% of the respondents earn less than that benchmark. And the income, let's see, that ends up being less than $30,375 for a family of four. And when we look take a look at the fair market rent for a two-bedroom unit at $1,200 a month, that's half of their monthly income just going to rent. So HUD would consider them severely rent burdened. All right, another cuteness break. I should have included a picture of baby koi from my pond. We had a couple hatch and one has survived, but I didn't have time to go take a picture of him because my pond froze over. Are there any questions that you weren't able to ask before that you have about the survey and the information provided?
Remember, this is a glimpse.
Yeah. So that's my question. So rolling forward then, the deeper analysis, what's the plan rolling out for that? What kind of time frame?
I'll answer that question in a moment.
Okay.
Can I put a pause that one?
Absolutely.
All right. Any other questions?
It's really good.
All right.
Can we share this information as it is right now, or do we need to hold off and wait until we have that final report?
I guess it would depend on who you're sharing it with.
Mm-hmm.
It's not secret.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's.
Okay.
I don't have an issue with.
It's not. Yeah.
We're not projecting assumptions,
sure,
or projecting an agenda in this. That's just,
yep,
the results as they were.
The raw data.
And
yeah.
You know, as long as it's known as it's an initial look at that survey,
yep.
So.
Cool. It just supports some of the other work I'm doing.
Yeah, not a problem.
No.
So our next steps, to answer your question, so we're going to do an in-depth analysis. Michael's already been kind of looking at some of that information. We want to work with the other units in our department and see what information they could use from what we've found in our surveys. And so we'll be doing that over the next several months. And we'll keep coming back to this information and analyzing it for the next 3 years at least. So. It's an ongoing effort there. We'll be doing focus groups. We're working with the consultant to help us draft the questions and the format of those focus groups, and we're hoping to do those in February and March. We might have to extend that timeline out a little bit, but that's our hope. We'll be reviewing the secondary data. So we've collected quite a bit. So the secondary data is other needs assessments that have been done in our community. We have a lot of them, a lot of that information collected. And then we'll draft the community needs assessment, the full thing, and hopefully have it to the CAB by September 2017. And then we'll adopt it in November, and then we'll provide it to the public either late this year or early next year. We don't want to release it right at the holidays, so we might look at that time frame, but we want to make sure that it gets out. And then we'll be available to provide presentations and things like that about the whole needs assessment as requested.
Yeah, but the intent behind this, you know, if we're going to do this, and Rebecca really has done like
by far the bulk of the work, and it's been fantastic. I'm really impressed by it. But you know, the intent behind this is to have a sound and quality enough product, you know, that is very useful information to us, and not just, you know, and from my perspective, not just for the CAB board. I was telling Vanessa, you know, I'm going to be sharing this. You know, Rebecca's going to be doing this presentation to the whole DCS management team. You know, I would like the counselors, both the city and the county, to be getting fed this information in an appropriate, relevant context that things are looking at. So that we can use it in funding decisions and programming decisions and stuff like that, not just related to CSBG.
I'm also really impressed, Rebecca, that you're already thinking ahead, and as you're going through the analysis of this survey, that you're already looking at and developing the next survey, because doing it as you go is a whole lot better than remembering it 3 years later.
Exactly, and we've been writing notes, and like I said, we have a draft of the next one started with some changes and notes on those, and then they're writing down the assumptions.
So the cycle would be another one in 3 years?
Yes.
Okay.
So it's due every 3 years.
Yeah.
So here's our contact information in case you don't have it for some reason. I will say I love pandas. These are my babies. Mm-hmm. And Michael loves llamas, or as he calls them, llamas. And so I had to make sure I got baby ones in there.
That's the correct pronunciation.
So. All right.
Well, like a sheep.
Isn't it cute? It looks kind of like a lamb, but it is a llama.
I think
it's the cutest one I've ever seen. So, all right.
Excellent.
Thank you
so much, Rebecca.
Thank you.
It's break time.
Yes, it is.
You're right on.
So we will reconvene at 10:55. Thank you, everybody.